Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to DTNS Experiment Week. All this week, DTNS is on summer vacation, but in its place is Experiment Week, where our producers and contributors are trying out new show ideas and releasing them right here on the DTNS feed. Enjoy.
African Americans are being arrested, charged, and held on faulty ID matches. Twitter favors faces with lighter skin tones, even Black Twitter. Autonomous vehicles be out here pedestrian bowling with kinfolk. Facial recognition, artificial intelligence, and algorithms in general really ain't feeling us. And in the first episode of the Tech Junk, we are going to discuss why. Welcome to the Tech Junk. I'm your host, Rob Dunwood. And joining me are two OGs in the tech industry that have been reporting on what's going on in the tech community for years. Stephanie Humphrey, a.k.a. Tech Life Steph, and Brother Tech, or he's known by his government name, Terrence Gaines. So how are y'all doing this afternoon?
I'm doing all right, man. Doing all right. Can't complain, man. Trying to navigate these back-to-school shenanigans with my kids with this whole masks and COVID and contact tracing and, you know, just trying to navigate a whole thing and pray over my babies as they go back to school.
Right. I know how you feel. My youngest is about to start her senior year tomorrow or Thursday. So yeah, it's like let's just get through the school year.
Right. So we got Rob over here who's an empty nester. It looks like he got the last kid out. Is that correct?
This will be the last one.
I've got.
Well, you know, they never really leave because my oldest moved out to D.C. for what? She was out there for a few years for grad school. She now lives less than a mile away from me.
Yeah, but she out the house. I mean, y'all can do some adult things. Is that
she
correct?
Out the house? But
you ain't got mouths to feed.
She could stop by. It's, you know, when she was in D.C., she couldn't just come by. At least if you could come back to Columbus, make it be inconvenient to stop by the crib. But I have to give it to her. She live a mile away. She really ain't coming by that much.
Listen, she got her own life. She got stuff to do, stuff going on, places to be.
Right. Unlike me, I got to make sure some music is playing in the background late at night.
So wow.
Right. So like I said, got Rob over here, empty nester. I'm a middle-aged adolescent, you know, got one in pre-K. I'm so old, man. And then we got Steph out here out in these streets.
Listen, but my mother actually lives with me.
So that's a whole nother dynamic,
right?
So that's
a whole nother dynamic. Yeah, yeah. It's interesting to say the least.
So we should probably tell the people what the Tech John is. It's a you know, new podcast. We're not going to even call this episode one, but what we wanted to do was put a show together where folks who look like us can talk about tech that affects us the way that it affects us without having to, you know, code shift. You know, we're just going to put it out there, you know, like it is. And, you know, Tech Life Steph has been doing this for years. You know, we see her on Good Morning America and stuff like that. You know, Brother Tech is out here doing conferences. And, you know, I'm like, is that my dude doing a conference he ain't tell me about? So I had to actually hit him up for that. Just, what was that? That was last week, wasn't it?
That was last week. Yeah, now everything's done. You know, new technology, everything is virtual now. So, you know, it may have, I ain't going to try to blow up their spot or anything like that, but it looked live last week, but I taped that episode, that segment, like a month ago. So the power of technology nowadays, especially
we love to see it,
right?
Virtual summits are the thing. So, and like, you know, I have been, you know, a part of DTNS for, I don't know, 2-3 years now. And just having a conversation with Tom Merritt, who heads up Daily Tech News Show. And, you know, just through conversations that we've had was how the idea for the Tech John was born, where basically, you know, we wanted to, you know, bring a show from our perspective. That's not something that you see a lot. You know, in the IT industry. So, you know, I'm a retired, you know, I guess I can call myself that, a retired, you know, technical executive. I've been in the industry for, I don't know, since 95 and just got out of it back at the end of 2019, right before the pandemic started. And I like talking and blogging and podcasting and being on camera and all that kind of stuff. So we're trying to see if we can't make this into a new career for myself. And like I said, you know, Brother Tech, you just, you know, told folks what you do. You know, Stephanie, you out here doing this. So, you know, tell the people where who don't know you, you know, where you stem from.
Well, so thank you for having me. I think this is a great idea to just get these tech issues from the perspective of people of color, because like you said, we don't see that enough in the space at all. But yeah, I am a former engineer. I was an engineer for 13 years. I have an undergraduate degree in electrical engineering and a master's degree in telecommunications and networking engineering from FAMU and the University of Pennsylvania, respectively. Rattlers Yuck. In the building. Yuck. Rattlers in Yuck. The house. Yuck.
We're not going to talk about this.
You
eventually we're going to get into this Tennessee State versus FAMU thing.
There is no versus that. Really. Yeah, like, yuck. That's not really real a competition or a yeah, contest. Yeah. Okay, so okay, not really okay. anything to get into.
All right. There. All right. All right.
We know what it is.
Okay.
But proud HBCU graduate and Ivy League graduate. And yeah, worked for 13 years as an engineer with a company that shall not be named, and just wasn't satisfied, wasn't fulfilled with the work, wasn't really happy there, and started doing a bunch of different things in the media and entertainment space. So I mean, I've acted, I've modeled, I've reported traffic for news stations in Philadelphia. And back in 2011, so it's been what? That's 10 years ago.
10 years.
Pivoted the brand since I had all this background and education and training and technology. And I'm an engineer. I was born an engineer, so I love technology. That didn't go away while I was doing all those other things. I just hadn't seen how to make the connection yet, but in 2011 was able to make that connection between all of the media stuff I was doing and all of my technical background and training, and a Tech Life Expert was born. So, you know, I basically just get to show people how technology makes their lives easier on a variety of different platforms. I was the tech contributor to the Harry Show. I worked for HP as their on-air spokesperson at QVC. And now I am currently a freelance contributor to ABC News, where I do tech segments for Good Morning America and GMA3, What You Need to Know, do some stuff for Sirius XM, local stations here in Philadelphia, Fox 29, radio stations. I used to write for Ebony, ebony.com. I now write for the Philadelphia Sunday Sun. And just, you know, out here spreading the tech gospel in these streets, pretty much.
So I actually knew of you before Terrence, you know, hit me to you, and he was like, you know, he was like, because he and I were, you know, we had the first conversations about this show, and he's like, oh yeah, I'm gonna hit a couple of my peeps up, and then he sent me your bio. I think he just sent me your Twitter handle. And I was like, oh, like that Tech Life stuff from TV, and it's like. It's like, you know, you kind of buried that in the lead that you actually knew people who really do this. So I'm really happy to have you here.
So that Terrence means my get brand kind is working
love.
For me.
Terrence don't get this kind of love. He know, you know, he and I, how long have we known each other? It's got to be, what, 8-9 years now? It's
been a minute. Back when you was a remarkable.
don't remind me.
The Blackberries.
I'm still upset about that, man. I'm still upset about that. Steph, I used to run a Blackberry enthusiast website.
Wow.
This is back in the day. So, I mean, I think I started that site like in 2006. So it goes way back.
You was standing for BlackBerry that hard?
Hard.
Well, back then, that's all there was.
Yeah, you're right.
This is before the iPhone. Listen, before Android.
I get it. You ain't gotta justify. I'm just saying that's a lot of love.
Yeah, you see the gray hair. I've been doing this for a while. The BlackBerry was the joint back in the day before they decided not to.
I do not disagree. I had one, but I would never have started a Stan account. Well,
so that led me into meeting Terrence.
There you go. Well, it all worked out.
So it all worked out. So for no other reason, Terrence and I became boys. Like I said, we've known each other for, like I said, it's got to be 8 or 9 years. So Brother Tech, why don't you tell the folks about yourself a little bit?
And no problem. Terrence Gaines, like I mentioned, also known as Brother Tech in these technology streets, started off as a blogger, blogging about just technology in general. My wife, she got tired of me talking to technology about her. So she said, you know what you need to do? You need to tell somebody else. So that's how Brother Tech, the website, was born, talked about technology in general. That kind of led me to freelance writing, almost in the same circles that kind of Stephanie went through, you know, wrote for Black Web 2.0, wrote for Ebony, wrote for Black Enterprise, wrote for a lot of different websites about technology. The blogging led me to be an influencer where, you know, talk about all the crappy technology out there. You get the free samples of the stuff that you can't sell, but you don't want to throw away. So I did that whole spiel that led me into actually doing a little bit of consulting. So I am an IT professional at heart. Like I said, I've been doing IT for, man, shoot, almost 10, 20 years now. Stephanie mentioned, I went to the better half of some of these HBCUs out here at Tennessee State University. like I said, man, always been interested in technology, always been interested in the gaming, and that kind of led me into Mac consulting. So I'm actually at Apple certified support professional, where I have multiple clients throughout the city where I do all sort of Apple IT support, whether it be setting up cloud services, Microsoft 365, Google Suite app, Google Apps for Business now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Set up all those things. And I still, like I said, from time to time, do some writing for PC Magazine. Me and my co-host of my podcast, make sure I plug my own podcast here, Snob OS. We are Apple snobs. And small story about that is, again, when I was at home telling my wife about technology, my wife had a coworker telling her about technology while she was at work. And she's like, y'all need to get together. So that's how our website, our podcast rather, was created, where we talk all things Apple and then some. So we talk Apple technology news, and then anything that we want to talk about, social media related, culturally related, so on and so forth. So again, that is the gist of me. Like I said, husband and father to 3 kids.
Okay. So, you know, good stuff. And I'm not going to spend a bunch of time talking about myself because I don't have any accolades like y'all got. I basically do the SMR podcast, been doing that with my boys for 513 episodes somewhere in there. So we've been doing this since, I think we started in 2010, and it's a tech show by 3 tech executives that look like we look. And we talk about tech like folks talk about football. And also, I'm a regular contributor on Daily Tech News Show, which is the, you know, the birth ground for this show. And really just a little bit more about this show. We, you know, as I said earlier, we wanted to bring, you know, some heavyweights in the industry that know how to talk on a mic and talk about tech and just, you know, cover stories from a different perspective. I don't want to say a second perspective or, you know, but a different perspective. Tech hits African Americans differently than it hits, you know, others. So we wanted to just kind of bring, you know, some of those differences, you know, to light and have a conversation. And in the idea for this particular show, where we're going to really, you know, dive into facial recognition and, you know, algorithms, artificial intelligence, you know, it was kind of born out of, you know, I was just looking at a story, and this is nothing new. I think this happened, you know, a couple of years ago, but a bruh got all kind of hemmed up because some facial, you know, facial ID that wasn't even close to being accurate misidentified him. And I'm just looking at this story of this bro who had to go through all these hoops. I mean, he spent several nights in jail, locked up, all because his photo ID looked like a picture of a grainy black man. I mean, that's literally the only, you know, relationship between what this man actually looks like and the picture that they had. He was black. I think that was the criteria that
I think they were like the same size too. Like roughly the same size, but it's like that could literally be anybody.
And it's like anyone who would have looked at it would have said, well, no, that's clearly not him, because it wasn't like they were similar. It was like it was completely a different person. But it's not something that, you know, is an enigma in the industry. I mean, these kind of things happen all the time. So, you know, just want to start the conversation with you guys about, you know, what's going on with these algorithms? Why are they not feeling us the way that they probably should?
And just for a little background, we want to get at brother his props. His name is Robert Julian Borshak Williams. This was in Detroit, back in, like you said, 2019. I think it might have been last January, actually, because I'm looking at the New York Times piece right now, but, And yeah, he was accused of stealing some watches, shoplifting some watches from a high-end store in the Michigan, in the Farmington Hills area. And they showed up at his house, like literally, you know, guns drawn, kids outside crying, and, you know, the whole nine. And even once they realized they had the wrong guy, because they literally showed him the picture and he held the picture up to his face and he's like, "This ain't me." And they're like, "Oh," like literally said, "I guess the computer got this one wrong," but still couldn't let him go, still released him without prejudice. That's the thing. When the prosecutor dropped the charges in this case, they dropped them without prejudice, which means that they can go back and recharge him if they need to. So even with the visual, you know, verification that this is not the person you're looking for, they still ain't trying to let the brother off the hook completely. So it's right. Just, you know, just real indicative of, you know, the bias in the criminal justice system that goes along with the bias in AI.
Right. And that's just what I was going to say, because, you know, we are all familiar with the, oh, you fit the description when it comes to police, you know, activity, when it comes to our interactions with the police. And the reason why I think a lot of people that look like us have a problem with this new artificial intelligence, artificial technology as it comes to facial recognition, is because it brings up all those traditional, stereotypical.
It's triggering.
Exactly. Yeah. It is triggering when it comes to technology, because we can argue all day long and say, okay, well, this person, this police officer, this official, whatever the case may be, they may have a background, they may have an upbringing that breeds racial, you know, being suspicious at least, racial at most, right? But how do we wrestle with that when it comes to technology? Because with technology, like, okay, well, this is supposed to make our lives better. And more importantly, how does technology have bias? But when in actuality, we come up with all these stories, we'll share all these details about bias in technology. And it's like, well, how did we get here? You know, and it's kind of hard for a lot of people, you know, people who specifically don't look like us, to say, well, that's impossible. You're reaching, you know, it's technology, you know, how can it have bias? And, you know, we're trying to tell people, you know, for lack of a better term, look, you know, this technology is coded by humans. It is coded by actual people, you know, so that bias is going to carry over into the technology realm.
Yeah. And there's multiple types of biases. And the biggest one at play, probably when it comes to AI and, you know, and algorithms in general, is just implicit bias. I mean, you didn't mean to be racist. You just didn't do things to make sure that you weren't. And that's one of the ones that's hardest for people who don't feel like, well, I didn't do this intentionally. They don't feel like they've done something. Therefore, well, if I don't feel like I did it, then maybe it really didn't happen the way that you're perceiving it. Maybe you're wrong.
Right.
And, you know, the situation here is that, like I said, this thing that happened to this guy in Michigan is horrible. The police tell him as they are putting him in handcuffs at gunpoint, yeah, this doesn't look like you. Yet they still arrest him. They still take him. He still spends the night in prison or in jail. He still has to go out and shell out for a lawyer. He still has to do all these things. And if you could see the picture that they had and the picture of him, it was a black man, roughly the height of the burglar, who had a short haircut. That's 40% of all bruhs, you know, walking around the streets of Detroit. So yeah, it is a big issue, but it's not just, you know, about the police here. You know, one of the things that kind of stood out to me as we started doing a little bit of research on this is that they say that it could be 100 times, you know, more inaccurate for women of color.
Well, that's the thing that stood out to me. Ding, ding, ding. Hello.
They say
it is most inaccurate for black women between 18 and 35.
And it's not even close. It's by far
most inaccurate. Like, so it's inaccurate for like white men sometimes, and sometimes it gets white women wrong. And then sometimes it gets, you know, maybe Asian people. And then, you know, then it gets the brothers wrong a little bit, but then at the bottom of the totem pole, which is par for the course in America, let mind you, black women at the bottom yet again with the most erroneous, you know, returns in verification and whatever recognition. Like, so that gave me pause, because I was like, damn, that's me. That's gonna be me. That's me stopped on the street tomorrow and somebody say, this you? You know, and it's not me at all. So it's just like, we really, really, really have to get to work and stop silencing the voices that are doing the work and calling out the bias, so that, you know, I don't end up the next Sandra Bland. Honestly,
and I want to repeat this so people hear it. You know, I'm going to say it with my chest. I'm not saying 10% worse. I'm saying 10 times
right
to 100 times worse.
Right. It's crazy
for black women. Think about that for a minute. So, I mean, there's other numbers in here, and they're horrible too. You know, there's another story where basically they find that for African-American women, it's, you know, 34% or worse, more inaccurate than it is for light skinned, you know, white men. But there are studies like 100 times worse. It's like, when you say 100 times worse, it's like, were you even trying? Did you even sample?
You weren't even trying.
You couldn't That's have even thing. Sampled black even women trying. If you are right. 100 times, right. you know, less accurate when you're, you
there
know.
There are like three pictures of sisters that you use to train this algorithm, and that was it. And they was all light skinned. You know what I mean? I'm just like, come on, man. Like help a sister out. I don't want to be the next victim of this because you didn't bother to do the work.
Yep. Yeah, and it's.
Go ahead, I was gonna say, and the problem with this is, you know, it extends way more deeper into just, or way more involved than just police interactions.
Absolutely.
Misidentifications at airports or at wherever the case may be. You know, this goes into technology as it relates to autonomous vehicles, simply because if you are misidentifying us when it comes to police interactions and airport stops or whatever, imagine when people just push this technology forward, because it's technology we assume is trusted. So you put it and integrate it into everything, mm-hmm. including driving cars. So right. if I'm having a hard time at the airport getting the soap dispenser to recognize my skin to wash my hands, imagine what's going to happen when I'm walking a crosswalk and we got all these autonomous vehicles out here who, and I'm reading a story here where it says researchers at the Georgia Institute of Technology find a state-of-the-art detection systems such as sensors and cameras using self-driving cars are better at detecting people with lighter skin tones. So last place I want to be is in a crosswalk when one of these cars right. comes by and it can't detect my skin tone.
They saying autonomous vehicles be out here playing pedestrian bowling. That's just when you think about it, you know, on the surface, it's just amazing. It's like I have a better chance of being hit by a self-driving car because I'm me. That's
it's awful. It's absolutely awful.
And we will, you know, in our show notes, we will definitely link to the, you know, that one Twitter article that I know what you're talking about, Terrence, where it's showing that, you know, dark skinned man cannot actually get a soap dispenser to work. Terrence, you and I are about the same hue. Now, some people will call us dark skinned. We aren't. We're very medium brown, because if you see somebody that's dark skinned, you would say, oh, yeah, Terrence and Rob are not. But it doesn't work for, you know, for us sometimes.
Is that why the soap is? Because I like every now and again, you know, when I'm trying to get the water to come out, like I could get the soap. Or like the soap maybe comes out later, or it doesn't see, but then the water is always like fronting on me, and I'm sitting here with this hand full of soap, and I can't get the water. Is that the sink is hating on me?
Yes,
is that what you're telling me?
It's like they don't want you to have clean hands, Steph, at the airport.
Right. Well, I mean, maybe because, you know, all of these new reports about celebrities that don't bathe, they just don't think anybody wants to wash their hands. I don't know, but that's a whole nother story. But I do like, even like when I'm in the gym or like anywhere I have to wash my hands that uses sensors, there is sometimes a little bit of a delay, or I have to do it twice,
multiple
or three times, or, you know, something like that. And I just thought that, you know, this is just, they bought the cheap version of the sensor or whatever, but it didn't occur to me that there was an actual reason, algorithmic, an AI reason, an AI biased reason behind why I can't wash my hands as effectively and efficiently as somebody else. That's insane.
Yeah. Basically all that stuff has to be programmed. That sensor doesn't just sense on its own. Someone had to put ones and zeros in there to tell it.
Absolutely.
When you see this color operate, don't operate when you see these other colors. So it actually looks at us as men.
I was under the impression that it was just based off of movement. You know, when it would see if something passes across the front of the sensor at a certain distance. So if anything passes across the front of the sensor at a certain distance, it should turn on, ideally. Like, but y'all telling me that ain't the case. Like, what's up?
I could be tripping. I could be exaggerating. I could be reaching.
I don't know, man.
But that's,
like, listen.
That's the point. This technology is going to be built into everything because it's technology. Our society, we love technology. We're going to, if we can, we will, right? It's not a question of whether or not we should. Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. It's going to be done. So you can imagine this technology is going to start being integrated into everything, like I mentioned, cars. So why wouldn't we make that leap or make that explanation when it comes to something as simple as a soap dispenser or a lotion dispenser in a bathroom? You know, it's not a far reach. You know, a lot of people would be listening, maybe say, they're exaggerating. It's not that
playing the race card.
Right.
Race card and everything.
I mean, but we've got story after story after story,
studies to prove.
And studies to prove it.
Yeah. And this clearly it has affected all of us. I remember I literally just was on vacation a couple of weeks ago, and it's just, I kind of know, you know, I saw this, you know, this Twitter article or this tweet a few years ago. So it's been out in the ether for a while. But ever since I've seen it, I just now know if they have a paper dispenser, I'll just grab the paper dispenser. And the trick is you stick it under, you know, on top of your hand and then pull it back real quick. And then, you know, because it saw the white, you know, paper, it thought that there was a hand under it. And then you pull the paper away and then the soap will hit your hand. That is a trick I've been doing.
That's a lot of work, man. Can you, I mean, just listen to what you just said, man. You're putting a piece of paper over your hand. You sneaking it in, you snatching it back, you keeping the hand. Like, that should never have to happen.
Yeah. And I would imagine that a lot of folks might be like you, Steph, where they don't realize that it's because of their skin color that the sensor's not picking up on them the first time, because it's just what it's always been. It's not like it works sometimes, it doesn't work. No, you're always. How'd I get this in there?
Yes, sticking the hand in there two and three times. And then finally, maybe I guess it must see my palm when it finally does actually give me the soap or something like that, as opposed to the back of my hand. But it's just, you know, it's so disheartening. You know, especially for us who love technology, who love to see the advances, who anticipate what it's going to be able to do for all of us and how it's going to be able to change our lives, to know that there are still these these little things, you know, because of human, you know, because of our human condition, you know, in this country and around the world. And it is just very disheartening to know that these little things still exist in a space that is supposed to be colorblind and democratic and meritocratic or whatever, you know, all of those things, that these little things still exist. It is very, very disheartening. I need Google and them to do better.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone. This podcast is supported by Tools and Weapons, the podcast hosted by Microsoft Vice Chair and President Brad Smith. Right now on a special edition of Tools and Weapons, Brad Smith is sharing a vision for what Microsoft calls the new AI economy. It's an idea rooted in technological revolutions of the past, like the printing press, which created a vibrant marketplace of related innovations, ultimately leading to an explosion of books and readers. But he doesn't just give a history lesson. In the episode, Brad lays out the tangible ways that Microsoft is providing infrastructure and other support to those leading the charge of the new AI economy. And he explains the importance of using that infrastructure to ensure equitable access to AI to people all over the world. To stay current on insights from voices at the center of the conversation on AI, follow or subscribe to Tools and Weapons with Brad Smith wherever you like to listen.
I was just in the car the other day and I was listening to one of the local radio shows, and it's not a tech show at all, but this came up. It was his sister was on one of these shows. She just came off a vacation and she was complaining about, I don't even know why I do global entry, because it always lets me get out, but it never lets me get back in. And the reason is because when she's going on vacation, she's coming back tanned, and she's like, every time that I come back and I have any kind of tan, the facial recognition doesn't get me. So I have to go to an additional line where they have to check my passport and do all the stuff that I was hoping that global entry would alleviate me from having to do. So it's not always someone getting arrested or, right, you know, someone being misidentified. It is everyday, little stuff. And I'm sure that there are a lot of people are thinking, well, that's not, you know, a big deal. And, you know, if it was just one person one time, it wouldn't necessarily be a big deal, but it's a lot of people, a lot of the time. And the answer is, oh, it's just not a big deal every time. So, this needs to be addressed, because if it was a larger segment of the population that this affected, it would get corrected. And that's all Absolutely. That we're asking, is that, you know, you need to correct it. And then, you know, when you come out with the next new thing, put some people who have a different perspective on your development teams and let them ask some questions that you didn't necessarily think to ask, to make sure that you aren't discriminating against someone implicitly, with an implicit bias, because you just didn't think, like I said, a lot of people would say that Terrence and I are dark skinned brothers. We are not. We're not, mm-hmm. not even close.
I consider myself caramel, but continue. Caramel
conflicted.
So, we've got a story in our notes about Twitter. I mean, Twitter has shown, and they're working on this, but, when Twitter is using AI to pick out faces, it prefers lighter toned faces, regardless of what it is that is being talked about. So, you know, there's a thing out there for folks who are listening who have not heard this term called Black Twitter. And it is a thing. And you should spend some time and investigate, learn about it. It'll make you smile. There's some really cool stuff on Black Twitter. But even with Black Twitter, it doesn't like black faces.
I was maybe Black Twitter will be our second episode, but continue.
Yeah, I was just saying that,
I think, you know, these are all, like you said, something that people would consider minor inconveniences. Why are you, it's not a big deal. Just, you know, run your hand under the sensor another time or whatever. But there are some instances where the use of AI is life or death for people of color. And that's in healthcare.
Mm-hmm. Because Absolutely.
We talk about facial recognition and the AI that goes into facial recognition, but there's also artificial intelligence and algorithms being used in how people get treated and how people are allowed to receive treatment by insurance companies and healthcare companies. And there was an article I read in Nature, and the one particular statistic that stood out to me the most, because the algorithms don't consider Black people to be as sick as they consider white people to be when they have the same symptoms, when all of the other, you know, thing, everything else being equal, they still won't consider Black people to be as sick. So they won't recommend the same type of treatment for a Black person as they would for a white person. And the statistic that stood out to me is with the algorithm as it stands, the one of the main ones that a lot of the healthcare organizations use, with the algorithm as it stands, there were 17.7% of Black people that got extra care that they needed versus 46.5% that should have gotten the extra care that they needed. You know what I mean? And I think about my mom, who has high blood pressure and, you know, is older, and my father, who has diabetes and high blood pressure and heart disease and all of these different things, who would go into a doctor's office and not receive the same type of care as somebody who maybe didn't even have all of those things because of the color of their skin. I think about myself, you know, when I'm advocating and trying to make sure that I get the right amount of healthcare, if I ever did decide to get pregnant, maternal healthcare and mortality, it's, you know, we're having fun with the idea that, you know, we might get run over by a self-driving car, and we're trying to keep this topic light. But at the end of the day, we really are in a battle for life and death with the way these algorithms are biased towards people of color. And we really, really got to keep doing the work of raising that awareness and making sure that these teams get more diverse.
Right. And not only that, you know, you think of those same people like, you know, Stephanie, that you mentioned, you know, that builds even more of a distrust in the health system, because like you mentioned, if you go to a doctor, you know, you go to a hospital, an algorithm says, well, or does this, and this outcome that happens, then you're already, okay, you've just solidified my distrust that I have
knew
in
I
the health system.
Y'all. Mm-hmm.
And then you end up not coming, or not coming as frequently, or not coming when you should. And then that's how, you know, you avoid the hospital until you end up with stage four this and advanced that and whatever the case may be, because this actually builds into our psyche. You know, that could be damaging just to our mental.
Oh, absolutely. And I think when it comes to healthcare, and we don't have to dive into this in this show, but, you know, I threw out the term implicit bias. I think when it comes to healthcare, there's a whole lot of systemic, you know, bias absolutely. And just racism in there as well.
Yeah.
But also, but there is still a lot of implicit. So one of the studies I was looking at about this, I think it might be, you know, one of the same ones you were looking at, Stephanie, was that it was talking about how much, you know, someone spent on healthcare as a determinant to how much healthcare they actually needed, how bad things were. So historically, African Americans spend less on healthcare, regardless of what the reason, you know, for spending in the first place is. So you could have a white person historically that if they sprain their ankle, they may actually go to the hospital, get the MRI, spend significantly more from a healthcare standpoint than the Black person who has the exact same injury. The Black person just may, I'm not going to get that MRI. I'm not doing, you know, it's just before I go spend 10 grand for one test, let's just see if ice and compression help. And so you tend to spend less.
Robitussin on it.
So yes, literally, rub some Robitussin. what Chris Rock's greatest stand-ups. But you know, but the problem with that is that if you're looking at just how much people spend on healthcare, you automatically are going to be biased in that because different groups of people spend different amounts for the same thing.
So that gets coded right into the technology.
It gets coded right into the technology. Absolutely.
So these are things that we definitely need, you know, to look at.
And then when we do try to diversify the space, you know, even that gets shut down. That brings me to Tim Nick Gabriel, who worked at Google. She was their leading, you know, she co-led their ethical AI team. So she was widely regarded and still is widely regarded as one of the foremost, you know, authorities on artificial intelligence and the ethics that need to go behind how these algorithms are getting programmed. And they pushed her out because she found out something that was probably going to hurt their bottom line.
Mm-hmm. It sure did.
Ethics don't mean nearly as much when it affects how much you make.
No, not at all.
You can always excuse.
Ethics become optics when the money is on the line.
You should put that on a t-shirt. Ethics become optics, because that's exactly right. It's like, oh yeah, we are really, really into making sure that we're doing all this stuff that is ethically right until it actually affects how much money we make. And then,
exactly.
No, that person that illustrated what was wrong, they got to go.
And then instead of them like working with her and saying, you know, like you mentioned going back, Rob, you mentioned that story about Twitter, and Twitter actually put out a statement. And this is, of course, it could be the optics again, where they say, you know, we are working to do better. And they've mm-hmm. actually said, okay, well, they've got to get it. They gave a better explanation of how they do cropping images when it comes to this sort of thing. You know, so they kind of opened up, you know, or were more open about how they do this technologies. But it's just strange that instead of them, Google in this case, saying, okay, we want to thank our scientists. You know, she has uncovered this new thing that we need to work better on. And as a matter of fact, we're going to make her lead of this team right. So they can do more explanation or more a deeper dive into this research. Like you said, it went back to the bottom line and said, okay, well, it sounds like she's going to cause a problem for us. Let's just go ahead and sweep this under the rug. And it hurts to wonder, how many times has this been done before? Instead of right. them attacking this problem head on, it's saying, okay, we're just going to sweep this under the rug.
Shoot the messenger, basically.
Right, right.
Yeah, and to call a spade, with Twitter, them fixing their algorithm and getting it right ultimately bolsters their bottom line. In the case with Google, not so much. He's like, right. No, this is going to cost us money.
Right.
We're going to go a different direction because we're not trying to come off of the level of effort that it's going to take to fix these things. So we would rather just not have the person who's calling them out here.
I will say, you know, because, you know, we don't want to be Debbie Downers.
Yeah, that's true.
Google is, well, you know, I will be if I need to be, because, you know, we'll need to be called out. But I would say Google is actually changing some of this updating some of the software in their image processing for their cameras. So the new Pixel phones this fall will have better image processing that will better recognize dark faces. There was an issue about not recognizing curly hair or wavy hair. Hair, especially against a darker background and when you're using portrait mode and different things like that. So, you know, we're clearly going to have to do this incrementally and in baby steps. So, you know, that's one thing. I also appreciate the fact that, you know, in response to a few major cities pledging not to use facial recognition in law enforcement, like Amazon's recognition system, Microsoft system, a few other big tech systems have taken their systems offline until they can really dive into the AI and the algorithms and make sure that, you know, that bias is as mitigated as it can be. So, you know, I like as with anything else in this country that relates to race, you know, we got to take it one step at a time, but it does look like some of the companies are at least recognizing that there is a problem that needs to be addressed.
Yeah, I think it's definitely good that you have, you know, governments, municipalities, they're saying we're not going to use this. But I think it's also, you know, something we should note that companies that created are now going to their customers and saying you can no longer use it for this. It's not accurate enough. And that helps too, because I think we all would agree there are some places that they could really care less about whether or not it's accurate or not. It's a tool that we have. We paid for it. It's locking people up. We're going to use this software. Right. And like I said, I can't get beyond that in some cases that this is 10 to 100 times more inaccurate for black women. 10 to 100 times more accurate. Where else in society, where in society is that acceptable amongst our fair complected brothers and sisters out there? When could you say it's like, yeah, we're going to use this for white women? It could be 100 times more inaccurate than it is for white men.
But we're going to use it anyway.
We're still going to go ahead and roll with it.
It'll never happen.
Right.
It'll never, ever happen.
And I think, again, the concern, like I mentioned before, is this is going to go forward. We're not going to table artificial intelligence. We're not going to table facial recognition. This is going forward. They're going to find new practical, or in our case, impractical ways to use this. And I just think, you know, to be more proactive, you know, something as simple as going back to Timit Gebru, you know, from Google, you know, more diversity in research.
That's
you know,
it.
I mean, that is a simple thing that we have been talking about, diversity in technology in general. You know, when you have a specific problem that affects black folks as it relates to technology, the proactive thing before this becomes Minority Report, before this becomes Skynet, would be to add more diversity in research, you know, development and implementation.
Absolutely. And I got to call out another woman of color researcher, Joy, and please forgive me, Joy, if you're listening, because I'm about to really do my best on your last name. Bolamwini. That's what I'm going with. Joy Bolamwini. She is a researcher at MIT. She was the subject of a Netflix documentary called Coded Bias. And, because she did a ton of research in this very field, the facial recognition field. And she also works, and founded an organization called the Algorithmic Justice League, that is continuing this work and fighting to get more diverse voices in the space. So, you know, there's folks out there fighting the good fight.
Absolutely.
So what do you guys think? You know, besides the obvious thing is hire more diverse work staffs, you know, you have a diverse workforce, you'll hear different opinions, you'll hear different thoughts. But beyond that, what are some of the things that organizations can do to try to make sure that their algorithms are not being biased against people of color, against women, against a particular demographic?
Well, don't be lazy. I mean, you know, there are some issues around bigger data sets. That was part of what Timnit was at Google was calling out, was the fact that to train these data sets to be the most effective in their artificial intelligence, it takes a lot of energy. The same way it takes to mine Bitcoin, it takes that same amount of energy to train these data sets to recognize faces and do things like that. So, you know, that the bottom line piece of it may be part of the reason why we don't get as much data in the system as white people may get, because it just takes too much time and too much money and too much energy and too many resources to add that much data. But maybe pull back on the amount of, you know, data you're using for someone else, and for a time at least, and add more, because it literally just boils down to you haven't used enough data to train your system. And whether because you didn't even think to use it, like you said, implicit bias, like, oh, I didn't even think to put, you know, 10 black pictures in here when I have 100 white pictures. You know, use more data and figure out what that looks like in the grand scheme of training your systems. Like, right. That seems like such an easy fix. Just use more data.
Right. And then until then, they get to those being able to train those big data sets. You know, I know it sounds counterproductive, but you may need more human oversight. Again, like I mentioned,
that's
that's counterproductive to, you know, artificial, because it's artificial and it's supposed to be rapid. It's supposed to be more accurate, so on and so forth. But throughout this whole, you know, episode, we have pointed out specific ways to where it's not as accurate. So until we can get to where you can train those big data sets, you're going to need human oversight, especially when it comes to putting Black folks in hurt, harm, or danger, police interactions,
hit by cars.
You're right. I'm trying to come up with a better way to say it, but
you got to play Frogger with the Ubers out there. You know, okay. We're going to have self-driving Ubers at some point, and you got to play Frogger with them.
And you got to play Frogger. And don't let it be nighttime. You really doubly.
So, guys, good episode one. Or you know what? We can't call this one. Let's call this episode zero. I've enjoyed having this conversation. And, you know, I think that we're going to be able to have, more conversations, like this. As I said at the beginning of the show, what we want the Tech John to be is not necessarily a second take, but a second look at the news that is going on. You know, when we start doing regular shows, we're going to actually, break down, about a lot of big tech stories that have happened, during the week or previous couple of weeks. And we're going to break them down, how they affect us. Sometimes it's not going to be any difference, but sometimes, many times, there will be. And, those are the kind of conversations that we're going to have here on the Tech John. So, I want to allow you two to give everybody your credentials, so how folks can get at you if they want to, send you a tweet or send you an Instagram or Snapchat or whatever. Stephanie, why don't you go ahead and start?
Yep, I am all around the web at Tech Life Steph, TechLifeSteph. Hit me on IG, send me a DM, or you can always visit my website at tilldeathdoyoutweet.com.
Yep, and you can find me, Terrence Gaines, also known, like I mentioned, as Brother Tech, B-R-O-T-H-A, not E-R. I'm not Brother Tech. I'm Brother Tech. You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at that handle. And also, like I mentioned before, me and my co-host, Nika Monford, we run a Apple-centric podcast called Snob OS. You can find us on the internets at Snob OS.
And I am all things at Rob Dunwood. And you can check me out on my podcast, the SMR Podcast. And you can also check me out on Daily Tech News Show. I'm a regular contributor there and on a couple times a month. So just want to thank you guys for joining me, and want to thank all the listeners for, giving us an opportunity to get in front of you with the Tech John, where you're going to hear things from a little bit of a different perspective. Hope you enjoyed.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.